Happy birthday, Mommy. We love you.
Hope you're having a nice day.
Love you, baby.
And Calum called Robert Downey Jr. over, and Robert Downey Jr. remembered him from the Long Lee day so many months before. And he said, I remember you. We were selling soap in the valley together. And at the time, I just thought, oh, maybe that's just something, the cool thing to say, like a cool, quippy, mean nothing, means nothing. But then as I thought of it over these years now, it's been, 6 years, I thought, maybe selling soap in the valley is what you call doing commercials for television.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, episode 43. Let's welcome everybody. And we're rapidly approaching our one-year anniversary coming up.
I know. Amazing. So 43, last week was 42, and I said that's the Jackie Robinson one. So this one is The King.
The King.
Yes.
Yeah.
Richard Petty, NASCAR racer, and also immortalized in the Pixar animation, The Cars.
Oh, okay.
And as The King, number 43.
Yeah. And yes, you're not feeling good this week, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if you can hear it, but yeah, I was a little bit under the weather, skipped running a couple days this week, but I did not skip my program.
Yeah, well, hey, you got to stick with it, man. You want that $500.
Yep.
Or what you're watching, thing I think needs to be put on break this week.
Yeah.
Because the kids are just the gift that keep on giving, and I had a sore throat and run down and feverish and going to bed at 8:30, 8:45. So, I mean, the TV wasn't on all week. I mean, it's like you're just trying to recover from being sick. So who wants to watch anything?
Exactly. Yeah. I too had a light viewing week, didn't watch much. But before we get going, I do want to say that there is an LA team that is undefeated, and I just wanted to wish the Burbank Luther Middle School girls JV basketball team good luck with the rest of their season.
Nice. What's the record right now?
3-0.
3-0.
There's only 8 games in the season, and I know some of you were thinking Rams, and I know none of you were thinking the Dodgers because they just lost to the Brewers tonight. So
yeah, my in-laws are in town, and we were watching the game and thought they were going to make a quick comeback.
Not enough at the top of the ninth there.
Not enough oomph. But I doubt you're having a beer, are you?
I'm not having a beer tonight, no.
All right, well, I'm going to get to mine, open it.
Let's do it.
Because it's, how big is this thing here? It's, what is it? It's a 1 pint, 0.9 U.S. fluid ounces. So it's Young's Double Chocolate Stout.
Ooh, yum.
And it's 5.2%, so it's not terribly heavy. I mean, it's probably a good nightcap, actually. So it has a cool, embossed bottle. I can't even read what it says. It's but whatever. I can maybe, put it in the show notes or something, but I don't even know where this thing's from. I think it's from England somewhere. It's the product of England. Brewed and bottled by Charles Wells. I can't even see this. I need glasses. I can't see it. Something Street. Havelcock or something? Beaufort, UK. All right. Well, there you go. 5.2%. So let's get a crack here. Okay. And then it's, like I said, it's Young's Double Chocolate Stout. If you can hear it. Ooh, pours frothy. All right, I'll let that head go down a little bit. And for those who are counting, you may recall that last week, Clarissa got me 3 beers. So last week was Hop Stupid, because I'm Hop Stupid. And this week is the Young's Double Chocolate Stout. So it's probably, we'll see how it goes. When I take a sip, I'll let you know.
Cool.
So while I'm waiting for this, Ted, how was your week, other than being sick and undefeated girls basketball?
Yeah, I think that's about it for this week. That's it.
Okay. Yeah, me too, man. Like I said, we had a slow week with being sick and trying to recover. Though, I didn't miss a day of riding the bike, because I'll tell you, when I ride the bike, man, I feel so much better. It clears, the cool morning air just clears out the sinuses, gets everything going, you know, and then the ride home makes me feel invigorated. But then all of a sudden, 7:30 rolls around after dinner, and bam, I just hit the wall. I'm done.
Thanks for staying up late for this.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, the show must go on. All right, let me have a sip here, and I'll give you my quick tasting notes, and then we'll get rolling.
Awesome.
Wow. It's creamy. It's chocolatey. I was now that it sits on the palate, it's almost like drinking a Hershey bar. Yeah, that's pretty chocolatey.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know. I mean, it's like, I would say it's good to drink a little bit of it. It's bad. It's kind of like, you know, if you have like a triple chocolate cake, like the first bite, you're like, I can eat the whole thing. But like four bites in, it just lays on you like a lead balloon.
Right.
You know, and it's just so rich. I have a feeling that's where I might be with this.
You're going to be headed there.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pass some off to my father-in-law. Maybe he's probably hanging out background somewhere. But anyway, yeah. So shifting gears. How about we hit glass?
Jump into some glass here.
Yeah. So I'm not familiar with glass.
Oh, this is interesting. So you aren't familiar with glass.
Well, I guess it's Unbreakable from what, 2000 or something? I was looking up.
Right. So it's the third in the Unbreakable trilogy.
Oh, three. What's the second one then?
The second one is Split.
Split. I heard of Unbreakable. I never heard of Split. And I haven't seen any of them, so.
You haven't seen any of them?
No.
Okay. Well, Unbreakable is a great M. Night Shyamalan movie. I'll give you a quick deep dive, a quick hit on that. In Unbreakable, there's a man who doesn't know anything about himself or just sees himself as a security guard, and he turns out to be superhuman. Sorry, spoiler. It's almost 20 years old.
Well, and I was going to say, I think the Glass trailer gives that away.
Right. So that happened then. And then now Split was kind of shown as a completely separate movie from this universe. And yet at the end, it's revealed that David Dunn actually lives within this universe.
And how soon after Unbreakable did Split come out?
Oh, Split was a couple of years ago. I think Split was like 2016, I want to say.
Oh, so that's recent.
Yes.
So there was like 2000, then like 15, 16 years later, they do Split, and then like shortly thereafter, it's Glass.
Right.
And are these based off of comic books or something?
No, they're generically based off of comic books.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of the X-Men.
But it does not have any lineage beyond, you know, M. Night's brain, I think.
Yeah.
But it is an interesting take. I was a little let down by the teaser trailer. You know, it was something that I was really looking forward to. I loved Unbreakable. Split, I was kind of lukewarm on. And then now I'm hoping that this can tidy it all up and bring it all together.
Yeah, so you're anticipating this is the last in a trilogy?
I think so.
Yeah, they kind of ran its course.
I do.
So did the other two have like the M. Night Shyamalan twists like he typically puts in?
Well, the Unbreakable definitely had the twist where it is revealed that Elijah, you know, while he was trying to coax David Dunn out into the light the whole movie, he turns out to be the mastermind villain of the whole world that they inhabit. So that's kind of that twist. And then in Split, the twist is the fact that this lives within the Unbreakable universe. Which is just a quick reveal at the end where it shows David Dunn at a diner hearing the news stories about James McAvoy's character.
Right.
So this one, it ties it all up, and we don't expect anything too different from these main characters. But I think that was part of the question that I kind of posed to everyone on Twitter was, do you think that because it's M. Night Shyamalan that you need to have a twist? Some people didn't consider the twist in Split to be a twist just because it's a little bit of a button and it just ties you back to Unbreakable. It doesn't really change the story of Split. So I don't know. What do you think? I'm expecting like double and triple splits on this one because I think he wants to throw it at you.
Well, I mean, typically whenever I see one of his movies, I go into it thinking like, all right, what's going to happen at the end? Because, you know, like The Village, Sixth Sense, of course, was, you know, he was dead the whole time. Wait, did I just spoil that? But, no, you know.
That was like 30 years, you know.
Right, yeah. No, but, you know, it's like you go into it and, like, I think it's the M. Night Shyamalan trope, right? You know, so yep. It's like you go into it, like you just know something's going to happen. So maybe the twist is there is no twist. I don't know.
Right.
But then would that disappoint you if that were the case?
And maybe that's why Split felt a little disappointing. I think for me, Split felt like the middle story of a trilogy, you know, which sometimes can be good. Empire Strikes Back, but sometimes it just bridges too much and it doesn't give you a lot of the closure that you're looking for.
Sure.
The girl character, Casey Cook in Split, they really didn't do anything with her and they spent so much time developing her character. So I'm hoping that it feels like she she's going to be part of the twist in here, where she's one of the supers maybe, and she is brought out into the light by David Dunn, and then she turns to the dark side with Mr. Glass.
Yeah, and Mr. Glass, he's kind of the ringleader of the crew.
Yes, he's the mastermind, and I love the way this trailer opens up with Elijah's mother, Mr. Glass's mother, talking, you know, doing the VO, laying down the groundwork, and she's, you know, you could tell she's kind of like a loving mother. There's a bit of a sadness to her because of what's happened to her son and how broken he is. And then, you know, she has this turn in the middle. You know, a lot of times we say that the trailer has a turn, but I think this, to me, this trailer has a full arc for Elijah's mother through the whole thing, because by the end, you know, she's basically chuckling as the mother of a mastermind, just proud of her son, not even caring whether he's doing good or bad, but just happy that he's excelling in whatever he does.
Yeah, and I love too that Sam Jackson was born in 1948 and the woman who plays his mother, Charlene Woodard, was born in 1953. So you explain the math. I don't know. Makeup, I guess, right?
Yeah.
I think the trailer is like, it's kind of creepy. You know, you're in this like mental institution and you don't really know. I mean, like going into it, like someone like myself who doesn't know anything about the story and who the characters are, and this guy's sedated, then he gets these roommates, and apparently he kind of like puts the band back together.
We're on a mission from God.
And I don't know. Like, they just have this, it has a typical comic book three-part story structure. You know, the way the trailer and the movie seems to play out. I mean, the hospital, the sedation, the roommates kind of getting everybody together. And then, you know, the organization of the criminal minds that gets the breakout and gets them out of there. And then the vengeance on society or whatever, you know what I mean?
I think that's the big thing for me. It's, what is the scope of this movie? Unbreakable had this very, very narrow scope. It was, you know, one man struggling with his, you know, him wanting to be a plain, simple man and yet being thrust into a place where he had to be a hero. And then with Split, it was a little bit all over the place for me because they spent so much time developing the girl character that they didn't really exploit in the story of the movie. So I'm hoping that this one finishes that up a little bit and gives us a reason to have invested so much time in Casey Cook.
Yeah, and James McCovey, I mean, he plays like, what, a half dozen or more, 10 characters in this thing or something?
Yes.
I mean, the scene with the light that flashes that changes his personality with each flash, I mean, it's almost comical, and his characters are just so well acted and spoken.
Yes, and it's, James McAvoy.
What did I say?
McCovey.
Oh, McAvoy. McAvoy. I don't know.
McAvoy.
Okay.
I thought it was a great tool to show all the characters very quickly and to get you into the space. So someone like you coming to this fresh, maybe without even seeing Split and definitely without seeing Unbreakable, you can get into the story of what's going on here without wasting too much time on it, you know?
Yeah, and I would like to see it. I don't think I'm going to see it in the theater, but I definitely would like to see it. And I'd like to go like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday or something, like back to back to back in the house.
Oh, that'd be cool.
So, you know, come home from work, whatever, put the kids down, you know, for the night, and then, you know, Unbreakable, and then Saturday is Split, and then finish up a Glass, and then you could just like run through them all, you know, and this is really what I was waiting for back in 2000 was for this to, you know, to finish up. So this way I could just watch them all at once and not have to like wait, right?
But now you've had the kids and it's all come full circle. So you have to wait for the kids to go to sleep. Yeah. A lot more going on now.
Exactly. But you know, now I could watch all three at once and we're done with it. No, it looks thrilling though. I think it might even start a little slow. You know, the trailer starts a little slow. You think the movie will be? Is that how the other ones kind of were?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yes, I think the other ones were. Unbreakable is intentionally slow. It has the longest shot lengths of any modern day movie, you know, made since 1990 or something like that. There's actually a website you can find, you can, I'll put in the show notes, that shows the average shot lengths of every movie. And it's off the charts. It's like every shot, the average shot is like 7 minutes or 8 minutes long. And it's just it's a meditative space. And even in the 90s and 2000, we were getting to this rapid editing pace where it was using editing to move emotion and drive characters and drive the story. So M. Night stripped all that away by using these super long shots, slow pushes into things. It's just a meditative movie for what it is, and that's part of the reason I love it. And then Split doesn't, it just throws all that out the window. It's 16 years later, so it has a different task, a different audience, different things going on there. So it has like this parallel storyline. So I don't know. I think this one is probably going to be more of a straight up story. It feels like, you know, get the band together.
We're on a mission from God.
Good versus evil. And then sorting it all out, you know? So, and I think it's going to be the most straight narrative of an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah, when you say like shot length and stuff, are you talking about like a Bourne Identity movie where like they do those really fast, quick edit jump cuts and everything? Or I'm not exactly sure what you mean by like shot length.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. You know, every shot in the movie is timed, and then they just take all the shots in the movie and then they average them out.
Yeah, I got you. So, I can assume you're going to see this?
I'm going to see this again, much like you, not in the theater. Well, maybe in the theater. We'll see if I can convince Anne to see it. I think we're planning on seeing Bad Times at El Royale this week.
Yeah, that looks like a good one, man.
So that's the one we're going to go to the theater to see. But I think by January, we should be ready to see another movie.
Where are you seeing Bad Time at the El Royale?
In the theater.
No, I know. Which theater, though? In Burbank?
No, we'll probably do one out here in the Valley, AMC. We'll see it on Tuesday nights for the $5 movies.
Ah, yes. Got to take advantage of the $5 movies. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I don't really have a whole lot more to say about it. I mean, I'm not necessarily learned in the M. Night trilogy here, or the third in the trilogy. But yeah, maybe I'll add it to, you know, what you're watching, you know, something along those lines, and then come back and we can have a further discussion at some point in the future. But you know, I guess my only concern is, you know, I might nod off for a minute or two, you know what I mean? And and when you have a character, or let me back up, when you have an actor who plays a number of characters, and if I wind up, you know, nodding off for a minute or two, and then he's doing a different character, man, you just lost me, because I don't know who he's doing and why and how did he get there.
Yeah, no, I don't think you'll fall asleep during Split. I think the Unbreakable is the one where you might need to drink coffee instead of beer.
Yeah, because it'll just like, I guess even the dialogue and stuff is probably slow, huh?
Oh yeah, it's well woven.
Yeah. Any last comments or move on to Bodied?
I think that's it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, let's switch over to Bodied. So a YouTube original, is that what I understand this to be?
It's actually, so Neon is an up and coming production company. They're doing a lot of these millennial films, kind of in your face stuff. They did Assassination Nation. And then this one is about
battle rap, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, wasn't there a battle rap game show or something on MTV or something like years ago where guys would just like, you know, it was like your mama jokes and stuff.
Yeah. Wildin' Out. That was the name of the show on MTV.
Wildin' Out?
Wildin', like wild and then apostrophe N.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then out. And it was definitely, like you said, it was a battle between two teams going back and forth.
What did you, well, what was your search query? Because I searched for like an hour trying to figure out that show.
Nick Cannon. So I knew Nick Cannon was on it. Nick Cannon MTV show.
Oh, you knew who was on it. Okay. See, I didn't know.
Yeah,
so Wildin' Out. Yeah, because wasn't it like a bunch of Yo Mama jokes or something?
Yeah, it's just back and forth. You know, I think for the simpletons, it would be Yo Mama jokes. But, you know, in this trailer, they definitely play off of stereotypes and they...
Yeah, yeah.
They play into the stereotypes and they play out of the stereotypes. So I have a very personal connection.
Uh-oh, do tell.
Well, not a personal connection with the movie per se.
Yeah.
But Caelan Worthy was an actor at the Disney Channel. And in 2012, we were doing promotions for Avengers.
Okay.
So obviously I don't represent Disney or anything or Marvel or anything like that. But, you know, it's part of my personal history. So I thought I could share.
So what do you mean he was a actor at Disney or at Disney Channel? So he was like on kids shows and stuff?
Yeah, he was in Austin and Ally. So it's one of the shows that Disney Channel had. And as an actor on a Disney Channel show, we would put them, package them up and put them together to promote Disney movies in the kids space.
Okay.
So we were doing Avengers. We were doing the long lead day for Avengers. So long lead day means it's way before the movie's going to release. We have a day of marketing where the actors come and we shoot them in a studio with some of our actors and we do liners and we talk about, you know, do little interviews and things like that.
Right, right.
So we had Caelan Worthy with Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. Interviewing them for spots that we're going to put on the channel, on the kids networks. So we did that about 6 months, 5 months before the movie was to release. And
did he rhyme a lot?
No, he didn't rhyme, but it was cool because he actually held his own with these huge actors, you know, like Robert Downey Jr. is one of the biggest actors around, you know? So everyone was very happy and cordial. And when it came time to do the red carpet, we thought, let's bring Caelan in again. So Caelan came to the red carpet, and on the red carpet, you stand behind the fence and you just start calling people over to you to get a little interview, get a little, you know, mic and there. And Caelan called Robert Downey Jr. over, and Robert Downey Jr. remembered him from the long lead day so many months before.
Yeah.
And he said, I remember you. We were selling soap in the valley together. and I, at the time, I just thought, oh, maybe that's just something, the cool thing to say, like a cool, quippy, means nothing. But then as I thought of it over these years now, it's been, what, 6 years? I thought maybe selling soap in the valley is what you call doing commercials for television. Because, you know, consumer packaged goods is probably one of the biggest advertisers on television.
Sure.
So if you're selling Clorox and Colgate and things like that, that's selling soap in the valley. So if you're in Burbank or anywhere along Van Nuys, that's selling soap in the valley. So I've changed it now, and I've tried to coin this term, and I used it in other places. And I was at the YMCA talking to somebody, and my daughter heard me tell this story, except I didn't say that I made it up. I just said, oh, that's what you call. I just sold it. I was like, that's what you call doing TV commercials. You call it selling soap in the valley. So I took something funny that Robert Downey Jr. said that may or may not have been really, really like deeply thought out, and I've turned it into something else. So now Audrey's like, you have to put that in your podcast. And I was like, all right, I'll put the whole thing in my podcast.
Well, and it's funny too, because like to them, you know, you have these big actors and they're going to sell soap in the valley or whatever. It's probably like the mundane, like in the trenches work,
right,
that they just don't want to do. But because of some contract,
yep,
they're stuck doing it. You know, some voiceover commercial work or whatever it might be. And then it's just like, whatever, just let me say my lines and just get the hell out of here, you know? And yeah, it's probably what every actor hates doing.
Probably the most, yep.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's one of those things, like, in every job, you have that thing, you know? And that's their thing, selling soap.
Yeah. Cool. That was a side. Sorry about that.
Yeah, but no.
Bodied. It's just funny to see this guy who we've seen grow up on the Disney Channel and, you know, act on kids being just goofy. And then he does this turn, and it's just, I think he carries it off really, really well. He's a super nice guy. And I think he does it to the T. He's, you know, he's vulnerable where he needs to be vulnerable during this trailer. He's in your face when he needs to be in your face. And I think he just shows a great range, and the trailer shows a great range.
And who's the audience for this? I mean, my opinion, 13 to 25 year old immature males. I mean, that's
why only men? Why not women? Why can't girls like this?
Well, I guess they can, but like, I don't know. It's like, don't bring your date to this, because then she's going to go find some guy who's more sophisticated after the movie's over. You know, like,
what if she brought you?
If she brought me, then it would make me question, what kind of woman is this?
Well,
I don't know.
That's because you're not a millennial.
I guess. I mean, who's the audience for this?
I think it's millennials. I think, you know, I think Neon has...
Nah, I think millennials are more sophisticated than this movie.
I don't think this movie is unsophisticated. I think it has a level of in-your-face-ness and stereotypes, but stereotypes laughing at the stereotype, not laughing at making the stereotype.
Yeah. I don't know.
You know, they have that one conversation where the girl talks to the, you know, to her friend, and they're all talking about their different ethnicities and what the audience is expecting for the people to say against them. And I just thought that having that one exchange in the trailer is kind of a nod to this hopefully being something more. The same thing happened with Assassination Nation. I think it came out and it looked like it was just a slaughter fest, gore fest, and then after it came out, there was a lot of people saying it has a lot more of social commentary about the state of society and social media of now. So I think this should play into that same space. You're right, it is YouTube original, so YouTube and Neon have gone in together on this, but I'm interested to see it. I'm still waiting for Assassination Nation to come out. I think it's soon to come out on home entertainment, so I will be seeing that then. And the same probably with this one.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, like you mentioned, it does, like, the stereotypes, and it brings out the racism and bigotry from where it hides, I guess, you know, and it shows kind of what different people's ideas are of other people and other races and things. I think my only concern with it, though, is, you know, it's just going to confirm biases.
Yeah.
You know, and people just get entrenched in where they are, and it's supposed to maybe poke fun and shine a light on people's, you know, bigotry and racism and bias. But oftentimes these things, you know, like when you think about what Archie Bunker was supposed to do with All in the Family, it was supposed to make Archie Bunker look like a fool, but too many people identified with him.
Right.
You know what I mean? And movies like this, that's the fear that I have, is people just identify with whatever they're trying to bring out, you know, to say, like, look, this is what we're going to show you, and this is how foolish it is. Let's move away and, like, treat each other better, whatever that means.
It's a caricature of something.
Yeah, it's a caricature, right.
And yet people identify with it, and then they take it and they hold it close to themselves, yeah.
Right, and it doesn't do anything other than confirm which camp you're in, and then, you know, you dig in your heels, and you're just like, yeah, you know, it just confirms my stereotype of these people, and we're just going to run with that, you know?
Well, I'm interested to see how they parse it out and how whether they can pull it off, because I do agree with you that it is a hard thing to sell and a hard thing to do to walk the line of.
You know, I'll tell you though, when you watch trailers like this and stuff, it's like, you just feel your age sometimes, because you're like, I'm just not a part of this generation. Like, I don't even get the appeal, you know? But I guess that's just how life goes, right?
Everyone ages and the world keeps spinning along, right?
So speaking of aging and time passing, and a movie that I loved when it came out in animated form,
uh-huh.
Aladdin.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think this is a story that needs to be told again?
Well, I appreciate the live action treatments. I like when Disney does this, the other live action Cinderella, Maleficent.
So before you, or while you're thinking of that, will you?
Yeah.
Define live action.
So live action is just not animated, has live actors in it.
Oh, okay. I was thinking like it's because live actors, but I thought it was like a mix of live actors with a lot of animation or something. I didn't know.
No.
Okay, I got you. I thought there was some nuance in there.
Live action versus animation.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because I thought there was some nuance that I was missing in that. So, because who knows? Yeah, you know, I think this is going to be less comical. What do you think? And I think it needs to be said, too, that this is a teaser trailer, not the official full trailer.
Yes. So the teaser, and part of the reason that I wanted to have this one in this week was the it teetered on the teaser space. To me, it wasn't a teaser when it showed Aladdin with the lamp. It opens pretty cool. It's a very slow open. It spends a lot of time in the desert.
Right. Showing like the city from afar.
Yeah. It's very full of itself when it comes to the landscape and things like that. So we have Agrabah, you know, we are definitely introduced to this space, and it is really awe-inspiring to see the Cave of Wonders and to hear the Cave of Wonders speak such a familiar phrase, you know?
Right, right.
But I think it's underwhelming to see Aladdin at the end of it, you know? I think if they had cut on just the lamp or coming up to the lamp with the song starting to swell, the song did it right. Everything seemed to be clicking along for the proper pace and exposure of a teaser trailer, but then it went too far with showing Aladdin, and it kind of destroyed any kind of anticipation that I had. And then it didn't even nod to the idea of having Will Smith in this. You know, Will Smith is playing the genie. I thought it would have been better to hear either Will Smith laugh or hear him hum or sing some bars, you know, and I said even you could even go as deep as to do like pretending like Will Smith is in a shower singing a song from inside the lamp, because that's kind of like an inside joke of the original Aladdin. When Aladdin's pulled out, he was in the shower when Aladdin rubs the lamp, you know.
You think Gilbert Gottfried is going to be in this?
I can't take it anymore. If I gotta choke down on one more of those moldy, disgusting crackers, bam! Whack!
I don't think so.
He'll be the parrot. What was the parrot's name? Like Ego or something? Or
oh yeah, what is the parrot's name?
Yeah, Igo or something. I don't remember. But yeah, I mean, he's an annoying actor, isn't he?
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't really do a whole lot of research on this. Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, I did do some, but being that it's a teaser trailer, there's not a whole lot there to research really, other than who's in it and when it's going to be released.
Right.
So, which is like next summer, and they're even vague on the date. They don't even have the date locked down yet.
Yes. I thought the graphics package was kind of, it looked a lot like Prince of Persia because it's sand. What else are you going to do with the letters and blowing away like sand? So
sure. Sure.
We've seen that in Prince of Persia. We saw it in A Quiet Place, you know, it's always a very common title card effect that happens. And it was kind of disheartening because Disney has gotten some flack before for having actors appropriate non-traditional roles. So they have white actors playing ethnic roles. And in this one, they went ahead and they got proper inline ethnic actors to play the roles of the characters. And then on Twitter, the day this came out, I saw a tweet from a very prominent Disney screenwriter, Terry Rossio, whose writing partner, Ted Elliott, wrote the original Aladdin. And he kind of was throwing shade on Disney and saying that none of the screenwriters from any of the animated originals were getting any kind of kickback, check, t-shirt, or even a ticket to the park for any of these movies that have come out.
Oh, man.
So, I don't know. I'm sure it's all legit, but it does seem kind of a little weak.
Yeah.
But I don't know why. I don't think, I guess Terry Rossio is not looking to work for Disney anymore, you know?
The 2019 Aladdin versus the 1992 Aladdin.
Yep.
The 2019 Aladdin seems much darker, or it's going to be much darker. You know, Will Smith and stuff, it could be comedic. I mean, I think there's going to be some comedy and some twists and some fun, but that's just, you know, my assumption, I guess. But I think it's going to be too dark to take the boys, you know, at the age that they're at now, where the original Aladdin, by all means, I would show them, you know, be the animated one.
Have they seen it?
I don't know if they have or not. I mean, we have it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if they have or not. Maybe we'll have to watch it soon.
There you go.
But oh, that was one of my favorites at that time, man. It was awesome, you know. And and I was like, what, 21 or 22 when it came out, you know, and I just loved it.
Yeah, we'd go to the park a lot, and it was at Disney California Adventure. It was the live stage show.
Oh yeah, I do remember that.
it was a great stage show, and the genie would change out his jokes to be topical. And so like every 2 or 3 months, you'd get new genie jokes. And for years...
New genie jokes.
10,000 years will give you such a crick in the neck.
What's your name?
Aladdin.
Aladdin. Hello, Aladdin. Nice to have you on the show. Can we call you Al or maybe just Din? Or how about Lobby? Sounds like, here, boy. Come on, Lobby. Yo, Rugman. Haven't seen you in a few millennia. Give me some tassel. Yeah, yo, yo.
And for years, you could go and just be like, I wonder if they put any new genie jokes in. And, you know, you go, 1 month they haven't, 1 month they haven't. And then, boom, all of a sudden something topical happens and they throw in a new Kim Kardashian joke or something. It was awesome.
Yeah, I do remember that. Like, there was one that we went to and it was like, who let the dogs out, you know? And
exactly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like all these memes, you know?
Right. It was, yeah. So he stayed relevant. And it'll be interesting how in 1992, Robin Williams was very topical. He was very into the pop culture and it played into the character and it played into how it was animated and what he did off, you know, riffing off of that.
Right, right.
So it'll be interesting to see how much Will Smith can riff.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to do an awesome job. I mean, he's an awesome actor. So I don't have, I mean, I think this is going to be a lot of fun to see. And I want to see how it differs and how it's the same. And I don't know, Gilbert Gottfried.
It looks like they're not going to have the parrot talk.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just assuming you're probably going to see this, you know, and with the
I'm definitely going to see this. We're definitely going to see it in the theater.
Yeah, I definitely want to see it too, and we'll just have to see. Maybe we'll, you know, when we see the official trailer, and if it's not as dark as it appears to be, I mean, they're just showing the one scene when he goes to get the lamp, but if it winds up that it's, you know, lighthearted and fun, then maybe, yeah, it is okay to take the boys. But right now, it just looks a little bit deep, you know, like a little bit scary for him.
Yeah. Well, Bryce is very sensitive, so I think we'll go see it first, and then we'll get his assessment on whether the boys can see it or not.
And then he can tell the boys, Mikey, you're just not ready for this. Right?
Right.
All right, man. So speaking of dark, a little bit creepy, our final one tonight, and we're, you know, I kind of feel we're running through this episode a little bit. But maybe we should, and, you know, so we can get back healed up and hit it hard again next week. But, hey, let's move on to Pet Sematary.
So Pet Sematary is getting a remake after 30 years.
Okay, never read the book.
Uh-huh.
I saw the original movie. What's with the misspelling? That it's the kids in the woods and they just don't know how to spell?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, okay.
To me, it looks like a sign from 100 Acre Woods.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes sense. I mean, okay, let me ask you this again then. Like I asked with Aladdin, does this story need to be told again?
See, and this is one where I don't know. At first, when I saw that it was the remake, I didn't think they needed to do it. You know, I don't know what was going to be gained from it. It seemed like it wasn't. I mean, the horror movies of the late 80s, early 90s, they're classics, but there's also so many of them. To me, this one, the original one kind of falls a little short of a, it's more of a cult classic, not a true classic. You know?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So I don't think either way, they could have gone either way about it, but I love Lithgow and I love Clark. So these two actors are perfect for me. The movie looks a little too scary for me.
It looks so creepy. Like, you know, I watched the trailer for the original one, which like you said, it was like 30 years ago or something.
Right.
And like, it looked scary for its time. Like, when did it come out? Like, 89 or something? I didn't even...
Yeah.
Is that when it was, 89?
Yes, 89.
Oh, wow, that was a good guess. Yeah, and I swear, I was about to look it up. But, you know, it looked scary, and it looked, you know, creepy, and probably for its time, I guess it was. But it's like, movie making has progressed so much, and like... filmmaking, not just... When I say movie making, I mean, you're looking at, like, the story... and the writing and stuff. And I think writers have, you know, more of a free hand in the way they do things. Like, you know, and just for example, you never would have seen a show like Dexter, you know, in the 70s or something. I mean, it was just things were too censored, you know?
Right.
And I think the writing, or I should say writers have more of a free hand, but also just learning to use the tools and the tools, you're not bound by film anymore. I mean, so much digital, computer, and I mean, you could take something that was shot in, you know, probably with a lighted set, and I mean, you can make it look as dark and dingy and creepy as you can just through color correction, you know, through digital color correction and so on, right?
Yeah.
So I think when you compile all that stuff, like the old stuff just really can't compare because you're comparing, you know, apples and baseball bats.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're onto something there. And I think the audience too has changed, you know, the audience, the sophistication of the audience and where, how they approach film viewing. And I think, like you said, when you talked about Dexter, I mean, film was definitely the place to go for the horror stuff. You weren't going to see anything horror on TV.
Right, absolutely.
TV was much, much more of a general audience space. But, you know, we're in October now, so there's a lot of looking back at horror movies in the past. And I did not realize Poltergeist was PG. You know, I saw Poltergeist as a kid.
Yeah, me too.
And it was not, I did not sleep well. You know, I did not cope well with seeing that movie as a kid.
Wow, that was PG, man.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, the movies in the theater were a lot, you know, it was scarier than maybe today. But then you look back on it, like, I loved Monkey Shines as a kid. I watched it on VHS a lot. I watched it on HBO a lot. And it was actually the movie that George Romero he left the original Pet Sematary. He was going to direct the original Pet Sematary, and he left that to direct Monkey Shines. And I was like, ooh, since we're doing this Pet Sematary, I'll revisit that Monkey Shines trailer for the movie that I loved so much. And time did not serve it well. You know, I watched that trailer, and the things that I loved about it, you know, when I was a kid, what, 89, I don't even know how old I was back then, but it was far, far from what I remember.
Yeah, and George Romero, he did Night of the Living Dead, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, the original, like, zombie movie.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're ignorant.
They're coming for you, Barbara.
So the original zombie movie, so it's kind of a no-brainer that he would like this, you know, Stephen King zombie pet thing.
And I like, too, in the, like, they show, so they get to the house, you know, out in the woods or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a truck drives past, and maybe that's how the animals are getting run over, I guess. But
yep.
The truck drives past, and, like, that's supposed to be, like, you know, with the music and the shock, you know?
The jump scare.
Yeah, the jump scare, right. And it's like, but do trucks, like, I mean, we're so, like, desensitized by vehicles driving past. Like, I don't think I would jump to that if I were the one at the house, you know?
Well, it's really set up. It's, you know, it's kind of manufactured, right? That I think that's the idea of this jump scare. And I don't know. I like this jump scare. At least they don't tell you to wait till the end of the trailer. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think I don't begrudge it. It's such a critical part of the movie that I thought it was a neat way to introduce the fact that in this space that looks like is the middle of nowhere, there's a highway running through it. And that highway, like, just like the highway disturbs the peace of this space, you know, we know it's going to destroy the lives of this family.
And going back to the 1989 version, do you think the Stephen King cameo was a bit over the top?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I mean, just and the cameo, not only the cameo, but putting it in the trailer, you know, it's
right.
Like, it's too much.
Yeah, I don't think he's in this one.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got an uncredited cameo.
Yeah, yeah. But he's not in the trailer, so that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah, I I'm on the fence whether or not I'd see this. I mean, I did see, like I said, you know, I never read the book, and I did see the original Pet Sematary movie. But, man, I don't know if I'd see this one. I mean, it just looks a little bit too creepy for me. It's like the older I get, like, the less, like, creeped out I want to be.
Yeah. I like the kids in the animal masks, though. I thought that was...
Oh, my God.
That was a neat, creepy twist. It was kind of Donnie Darko-ing it up, you know.
With the drum. The
kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, the drum beat was a nice piece to the trailer. It kept the trailer going in a march. You know, you felt like you were headed somewhere with everybody and
you're moving through the time. It's almost like a metronome keeping pace throughout the trailer. Right.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not saying I won't see it, but it might be a stretch and I'd have to have the lights on.
Yeah.
No, I probably watch it with the lights off, of course. But, you know, the funny thing is, you know, I probably won't see it because Clarissa won't see it.
there you go.
And I'm not watching this one by myself, man. No way. I need somebody to cling on to. You know what I mean?
Oh, and here's another reason. I'm rewatching it a little bit and looking at my notes. And I think, again, it has a trailer to the trailer, but I think they did it the right way. I think they took...
It's super short and it's not intrusive.
It's not obtrusive. And we have John Lithgow saying the line later in the trailer, right?
Right.
So at the top of the trailer, they just do this quick staccato of shots and the music is really hyper. It's super fast, but it has sometimes dead is better just written on the screen. So you have this great tagline for the movie, sometimes dead is better. And you have a character saying it later in the movie, but at the top, you want to share this same thought. So you share it graphically and you share it with the urgency of the music and the cutting of the trailer to the trailer, this 5 seconds thing. And yet when John Lithgow says it at the very end of the trailer, it's recalling something that's in the trailer to the trailer, but it's in such a different method of delivery that it's not at all off-putting. It's not like we're repeating the line that was said at the top of the trailer. We're re-envisioning it and we're repackaging it in so differently that it hits us at a different thing.
Yeah, and it's almost like John Lithgow and this just looks frightened himself, like, to be in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I mean, like, what was his name? Fred,
Fred Munster?
No, that's Herman Munster, but...
Herman Munster.
But, yeah, Fred Gwynne, I'm assuming Fred Gwynne and John Lithgow are playing the same character.
Yes.
And the Fred Gwynne version, he didn't seem to own the fear as much as John Lithgow does.
Yeah, and I think that that's an interesting juxtaposition between the two trailers, too. The 1989 trailer, which we have both of them on the website, it's really more about the story. You know, it really goes through the whole story of what's going on and what's happening and what's going to happen and what did we do, you know, and what they're doing. And the kid even has visions and he's explaining the visions to everybody, the audience of the trailer.
Right.
And it really gives a lot away, I think. And then in the 2019 version, they're just selling emotion, you know, they're selling the emotion of what you're saying, you know, of all of the characters, of John Lithgow, of the family, you know, and I think that's the difference between the two audiences.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, like you mentioned, the sophistication of the audiences, I think, has grown over the years. And I think the expectations of audiences has grown. So when you look at expectations, you know, then and now, I think there was just some forgiveness in, you know, like cinematography, like gimmies in a sense, right?
Right.
Because like you just had to, because you didn't have the computer generation, you didn't have the digital manipulation of imaging and all that kind of stuff the way you do today.
Right.
Where if you try and put something like that, that's a little bit brighter, a little bit cleaner maybe, and less gritty, you know, people aren't going to buy into the depth of the fear you're trying to sell them. And it's going to just look hokey.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and where I think nowadays, like, you really have to play into, it's kind of like, you know, photography in the film days with manual cameras, you know, if something was a little bit off, there was some forgiveness, you know what I mean?
Right.
But today with autofocus and the digital and stuff, man, if it's not tack sharp, like there's no forgiveness. I mean, people just rip your picture apart. And I think it's the exact opposite with filmmaking is, you know, or well, I should say the opposite. I mean, it's really linear where, like, yeah, you're just going to get beat up if you're not bringing the grit, you know?
Right. And I think, like you were saying, the darkness of this story, you know, when you compare it to the dark, the light, the bright shots of the original trailer, of the 89 trailer.
Right.
Yeah, there's no way that they would even try to shoot anything like this back then.
And I could see, like, the beginning of this movie being bright because they don't know there's turmoil yet, you know? Like, you're going from the city out to the country. It's all happy and cheery until you get the turn when it all goes wrong.
Right.
And, you know, zombie kittens are coming after you. But yeah. So, like I said, I mean, I definitely would like to see it. I don't know if I have the gumption to see it. I'd like to think I do, but then I got to convince my wife to do it. You know, I got to convince Clarissa to do it, but I don't know. Right. We'll see. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I don't think I'm going to see it.
The story, and, you know, I know the books are like, you know, 9,000 pages or something, but I wouldn't mind maybe reading it to see what it's like or something. And I know, like, Stephen King has just tons and tons of books that are just enormous. Probably never get through them. But anyway, yeah, to finish up though with my tasting notes,
yeah,
I just had to down this thing, man. So it was starting to get a little thick.
Uh-huh.
A little heavy, you know, on the palate and stuff. Like, just
too warm.
Too rich. You know, like, it's like I said, drinking a Hershey bar.
Ugh.
So I just downed it, and oh man, I feel like I just had, like, you know, dinner or something. I'm just so full. You know, but I mean, really good sharing with somebody. Next week's beer, I think I'll leave that as a surprise for next week.
But awesome.
Next week's beer, I think, is going to have to be a share because it's one of those 22-ounce bottles. I don't think, just by the title, I don't think I can, you know, go for it. So you just have to wait and see.
All right.
Yeah. But anyway, last thoughts, comments, anything about, you know, upcoming anything? Are we good? Are we out of here? What?
I think we're good. I think we're out of here.
Yeah, nice. I don't know, less than an hour episode this week, I think. So yeah, sounds good, man. We can go back, get some rest, hit some NyQuil, and, you know, like, rack out, and hopefully all the colds and sore throats are healed up.
That's right.
Recovered from.
Cool. You get better.
Yeah, you too, Ted. We'll talk to you, man.
All right.
Okay. Bye now.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.